I would like to introduce our first speaker, Sharon C. from the Living in the Moment group of NA in the Central Westmoreland area of Narcotics Anonymous.
Are you good to stand?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you. I'm a grateful addict. My name's Sharon.
Hi, Sharon.
Hi, everybody. Can we take a moment of silence to do with as you wish so I can get out of the way? Okay, thank you. Am I the only speaker? Is there a second speaker?
Two.
Okay. Like I said, I'm a grateful addict. My name's Sharon. It's always an honor, you know, to get back to Narcotics Anonymous. I've been taught to never say no when I'm asked, so I don't. And I got a text or a message from somebody yesterday saying, I heard you're coming up to the retreat. Can you speak on 8 and 9? And I'm like, sure. You know, that like was just like my automatic answer, you know. So I haven't had a whole lot of time to, like, think about what am I going to say? Oh, my God. You know, I've been through the steps a few times, you know. So, and for me, you know, these steps are about learning how to live them, because anybody can come in here and work them. It's what I do with them outside of the rooms in Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And for me, I can't, like, just go into 8 and 9. I got to talk a little bit about 1 through 7, you know, because I had to do those before I could get to 8 and 9, you know. And, you know, the first thing that I was taught to do is get into the steps, not wait a year, you know. You know, I've heard somebody say that one time, well, just stay clean the first year and then do some work. No, I don't think so. You know, the steps are the way in and out of this program. You know, so I got involved. You know, I got clean in 1988, and I relapsed, and I've been back since 2002. My clean date is September 28, 2002, and I haven't found it necessary to use. You know, and I got involved, and I started step work right away. And my first sponsor was like, said to my grand sponsor at the time, like, what am I going to do with her? She has more information than me. You know, because I didn't lose the information. I just stopped applying it to my life. And as a result of that, the simplicity of this program, go to meetings, don't pick up, get a sponsor, do some service work, and do some step work. You know, and when I stopped doing that, I used, you know. So when I came back, like, I got right into step work, you know, and they had the step working guide, and they didn't have that back in the day, you know. So I opened it, and I started reading it, and, you know, at first I was, like, really overwhelmed. There was, like, 89 questions in the first step, and I'm like, holy shit, you know, and, you know, but I became willing. You know, and I stayed open-minded, you know, and there are some of those principles that we talk about, that honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness that we read in the reading at every meeting, you know, and I opened the book, and, you know, and I started doing the work, you know, and answering the questions, and, you know, talking about, like, things that made my life unmanageable, you know, and even clean, we can still have unmanageability in our life. You know, it's all about a choice for me. You know, I try to the best of my ability and the best of my honesty, like, to keep that removed from my life. Am I perfect at it? Absolutely not. You know, but am I powerless? Absolutely. I'm powerless over people, places, and things. I'm not powerless over myself. I'm not powerless over my choices. I'm responsible for those. You know, step two is like we came to believe in something greater than our addiction. you know, we don't, like, for me, like, I hear a lot of people, like, in early recovery, they don't want to hear about God, and we don't talk about God till we get to step three, you know. And what I did at this point in my recovery, I went to all my predecessors, and I asked them, what was your strength in your recovery? And every single one of them told me was their relationship with God. You know, so by the time I got to step three, that's what I focused on. You know, I focused on that, and I did a lot of reading. I did a lot of, like, soul searching, you know, and, like, nothing I say up here is mine and mine alone. It's something I've learned from somebody else in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, and you know, I live in my third step on a daily basis. I do my third step every morning. I thank God every night for another day clean. You know, because some days that's all I can do is stay clean. That's just how it is for me. I just am still getting over having just a major surgery, and, you know, it's been a long road for me over the past 6-7 months. So, but, you know, my life is great. Today it's great if I remember the my last day using, you know. And I need to be grateful. Our literature says the grateful addict will never use. I didn't write it. It says, you know, if we live the program, people says an addict that lives the program of Narcotics Anonymous will never use. That doesn't mean just coming in here and answering the questions. It means taking what we learn in here outside in the big bad world and applying the principles when we need to. You know, I was in a meeting this morning where somebody was talking about we apply these principles in all of our affairs, whether it be with our family, whether it be on the job, you know, outside of here. You know, so step four, you know, it talks about, like, in the basic text, the bugaboos, and, like, we get caught up in all that negative stuff. Oh, my God, I got to write about this and this and this. And what the step says, it's a moral inventory. And if you look the word moral up, it means positive, negative. I found out when I wrote my fourth step and shared my fifth step that, like, I had some positive qualities. It wasn't all negative. You know, yeah, I wrote about all that shit that I did, but I also found out that I had some assets about myself, like that I'm a good person, and I'm a good friend, and I'm a kind person, you know, and these are all things that I never thought about myself, because the disease is always telling me all that negative shit. You know, it wants to get me to that vulnerable place, and I always, always try to remember that, you know, because of my past. You know, and I don't want to repeat what I've already had to go through twice since I've been a member of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, and my fifth step was, for me, you know, I shared it with my sponsor and God and moved on. You know, that's what a fifth step is for me. That's what I was taught it was. You share your fourth step with sharing your fifth step. You know, we didn't have the step working guide. When I first learned about the four step, we had this little pamphlet that said working step four, Narcotics Anonymous, and that's what we used, you know. And I got through that. And in my fourth step, my character defects were revealed for my sixth step, you know. And if you read in Works How and Why, it talks about, like, our sixth step is a lifetime process. Don't get stuck. A lot of people get stuck, you know, becoming entirely ready to have, you know, your defects removed. It's a process, you know, and it says it's a lifetime process. You know, answer the questions, ask questions, talk to your sponsor about it, and move on. You know, because in the next step, when you get enough pain from the shortcoming, which is the action from your character defects, you'll ask God to entirely remove it. I truly believe that, you know. You know, and, you know, I have somebody in my life that, like, she was trying to figure out, her sponsor said, go out and ask some people what's the difference between a character defect and a shortcoming. You know, for me, the character defect is that thought of acting out, and the shortcoming is the actual acting out and getting the consequence, whether it's good, bad, or indifferent. You know, and step 8 is really, really simple. We became willing. Willingness is the main spiritual principle in step 8 for me. Make the list. It just says to make the list. Doesn't say go running around making all these amends. It says to make the list, you know. So you make the list and you become willing, you know. And it also says in this process to make sure that you're taking some guidance from your sponsor while you're doing this step. That's really, really important. You want to go back to the dope house and make amends, you know. You know, there's just certain things that we did that you don't want to put yourself back in a slippery situation, a really dangerous situation, you know. And for me, I call those slippery places, and I don't go near them. Even with almost 13 years clean, I just don't do it, because I know how powerful the disease is. I know that it wants to take me out at any given moment. I give it the chance, you know. So I like have to stay in the middle. I don't want to get to the edge, because I might fall off again, because that's what happened. You know, and step 9 is where you actually make the amends. But sometimes those amends are not the ones that, like, you go back to that dangerous situation. Sometimes making amends is living the right way. You know, not robbing and stealing and doing all the crazy stuff that we do. Being good to society, you know, giving back by staying clean. You know, when I did an amends with my family, you know, and my dad said to me, he said, staying clean is amends enough for me. And I was so grateful for that. Because I did a lot of shit to my family. You know, I hurt them more than anybody else I hurt. I stole from them. I lied to them. You know. And, like, my mom was ill, and she had cancer, and she was dying, and, you know, I did a lot of really fucked up shit to them. You know, you hear people say, they've been here a while, like, we hurt the ones that love us the most, and it's so true. So true. I don't know why I'm getting so emotional about that. You know, but I took some guidance from my sponsor as far as the actual amends that I had to make. You know, there's, like, I have a brother who, like, hasn't talked to me in over 30 years. So I had, like, write him a letter. And he didn't even acknowledge it. You know, and I tried to, like, send him cards every year for his birthday. And I did this shit for years and years and years, and he never acknowledged it. And I don't do it anymore because, you know what? I had to be the number one person on my amends list. Before I could make amends to anybody else, I needed to make amends to me. You know? And I only learned that from my predecessors, because I didn't know that. You know, the first time I went through the steps, they're like, well, where are you on your list? I wasn't even on the list the first time I did it. You know, and what I learned is that I needed to be on the top of that list, because until I was made amends to myself, the amends to everybody else didn't mean shit. And that's what I learned, you know. And I just think that it's really, really important, it says in our literature, to take some guidance through these steps from your sponsor and let them guide you and direct you, because, like, we're not the best decision makers in the world. You know what I mean? We're just really not, you know. And still, you know, even after being here, sometimes we don't make the best decisions, you know. And my sponsor gives me some clarity. Some clarity that I may need in any given situation, you know. And I tell my sponsor everything. I don't have no secrets. I'm no secrets today, because she can't help me if I'm not honest with her. You know, and 8 and 9 is a really important part, that you need to take some guidance from your sponsor so you know which amends to make, which ones not to make. You know, don't put yourself in slippery situations. You know, because the disease will always win. Always. You know, that's my experience. I'm not saying that because I heard somebody say it. I'm telling you, it's my experience. And it was devastating getting back here. It was the hardest thing I ever had to do. I used to share, like, the hardest thing I ever had to do was tell all my sponsees that I relapsed and I wasn't coming back to NA. And, you know, but really the hardest thing was coming back in here and saying, I'm an addict and I can't do this alone. And I need you guys, you know. And life got better. You know, life got better. And I didn't feel like that in the beginning. I still wanted to use every day. But they told me to sit on my hands and just keep coming back. I did 150 meetings in the first 90 days I was clean. You know, I called my sponsor every day. I did step work. You know, I picked people up. We went to meetings together. We went to conventions together. We went to dances together. I hung out with people in recovery that had my my best interest at heart. You know, and you know, as a result, you know, God willing, this month I'll be celebrating 13 years. You know, and I'm grateful for that. I don't want to ever forget that. And if you're not proud of your clean date, you might want to get proud of it so you don't get a new one. Thanks for allowing me to share.
Thank you, Sharon. I would like to introduce our second speaker, Brett L. from the Step by Step Group of NA in the West Side area of Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, wow. Woo!
Hi, everybody. I'm an addict named Brett.
Hey, Brett.
I'm really from Altoona, though. But, you know. always nervous to share. I feel like I'm at my best one-on-one, but, you know, this fellowship told me to do stuff that I'm comfortable, that I am uncomfortable doing, and this is one of those things. But hopefully y'all get something out of this. So I'll share my clean date too. My clean date's December 8th, 2001. It was a hell of a day and a hell of a night before, just trying to find ways and means to get more. I remember I had a paycheck, which was rare. I actually had a little money that might have lasted for a few hours. But on my way to, I cashed that paycheck, and on my way to meet the dope man, and I was walking everywhere at this point because I had lost a car and anybody to drive me around. I was probably pulling a cigarette out of my pocket, and I lost that money. And that was like the most devastating thing in the world at that point in my life, losing money and ways and means to get another one. So I found a phone, got in contact with somebody to split a bag with me because, I don't know about you all, but in like Altoona, dope was expensive. And it was like, at the time, like $40 a bag or something. And so I broke into my employers and managed to scrounge up $20 of petty cash and got a hold of somebody that I used with, actually happens to be my brother's wife now, which is kind of odd, but and also something about getting high in Altoona was dope wasn't always easy to get. Like, I live in Baltimore now, and literally half a block up the street from my house, I could go any time of the day or night and get what I needed. And I couldn't imagine that, like, during my using days. But I still used. It was hard to get stuff, but I was still desperate to get it. And, like, you know, like, I chose my acquaintances and friends to try to, like, manage a group of people so I could get something when I needed to. And it's just, what an exhausting life. But so anyway, I got that half a bag of dope and probably didn't really do anything and spent, like, a few hours like soaking wax paper in a nasty pizza shop bathroom to try to get another shot and like walking miles. I mean, I was probably in pretty good shape back then because I walked a lot to get the next one. But, I mean, that was just my life. It was like, it sucked. It was basically just trying to get off sick, was my life. And it had started, like, just trying to feel comfortable in my own skin. Like I was talking about at the beginning, like, socially anxious person, like, growing up. I remember the first time, maybe not like, the first time I took an opiate, all right, my drug of choice, I felt like I was comfortable in my own skin. And I could, like, talk to whoever I wanted. Like, I had this energy to do what I wanted to do, and it was, everything was kind of fun. And so from, like, the first time I took that, when I was probably 13 or 14 years old, it was like, all right, the rest of my life, I just had to figure out how to keep enough of that in my system that I'm good, you know, no big deal, right? And the problem is tolerance develops and money's hard to get and, like, I don't know. We're just not, like, cut out to try to keep a certain level of chemicals in our body to do life. It just never turns out well. So, I thought, I mean, I don't want to do too much past and, like, war stories, but, like, I want to talk about it a little bit to qualify and also, like, to tell you what was in my eighth step and the kind of stuff I was dealing with. And like, Sharon before me shared, like, I was raised with some morals and was kind of, like, a nice guy, you know, and even got, like, good grades. And when I was younger, like, grade school and junior high, I was, like, even the sports guy and, like, the quarterback. And I don't know. So, like, you know, I was kind of, like, a good dude. And so getting the next one, I totally lost my train of thought there. But I guess what I'm trying to say is I had some morals instilled in me, right? So I felt guilt. And I felt guilt strongly. And so that same guilt that I felt when I had to steal and lie and manage my life, that same guilt's what kept me using. You know, I not only had to manage the physical part of my addiction, getting sick every day, I had to keep that guilt at a certain level that I could tolerate. And I had to, like, erase my morals long enough that I could get the next one, you know, that I could steal from my so that I could break into my grandmother's house and steal her change jar to get the next one. Because without a chemical, like, I just couldn't bring myself to do that. So I had these morals that I was fighting my entire addiction. Like, we were talking with it somebody yesterday, one of my old friends I got clean with, like, almost every time I used from early on, I would talk about wanting to quit. I was that guy who would, like, go to the dope house and I'm going to get this, but then I'm all positive afterwards and I'm going to quit, you know, like, just had this total two-faced kind of relationship with the world and my addiction. I was always putting up this front of, like, I don't know, most of my girlfriends' moms liked me because they didn't know, you know. They didn't know who I really was. But that took so much energy to be two entirely different people. So anyway, disease progresses, and it gets to the point where I'm the only one who thinks that I'm all right, or that I'm fooling people anyway. I knew I wasn't all right, but I was the only one who was still fooling people. But in the meantime, you know, I got my parents hostage. Like, we're to the point of the, let's lock you in the house to get you clean. And my brother and I used together, and we're two peas in a pod, and we're, like, scheming how to break out of the house and get the next one. I'm stealing change from relatives and stealing shit. Like, I'm scared to like steal from stores. I wasn't real big into that. But I remember the one time there's a Lowe's in Altoona, and I was dope sick enough that I run into the Lowe's and I grab a bunch of power tools. And my big plan was I'm going to run out the front door instead of the outdoor, because then like they won't be expecting me and they won't catch me. But so I get to the indoor, and here it only has the motion sensor on the one direction. So I'm standing here waiting for somebody to come in. This like senior guy comes running out, then starts pointing at me and screaming, "Thief!" into the store. And so I freaked out and threw everything and ran for the exit door. Managed to get out, but all the police cars were coming into Lowe's as I was peeling out. It scared the shit out of me though, because like, you know, I could have got charges for that, and I could have got arrested for a lot of stuff that could have affected my life in a lot of ways that didn't end up happening. And you know, so grateful that I didn't have that prison or felony record and have to fight that, you know, my whole life after recovery. But yeah, like the deepest damage was that shit I did to like my grandparents and my parents and my brother. Like, my brother and I were so close, did everything together. We were only 18 months apart, and we were a little, like, he could beat me up. And he was kind of like the cool guy, and then at some point, like, I could beat him up, and I was kind of like the cool guy. And I, like, ran him into the ground, though, you know. It turned into, like, bullying at the end. And, you know, I feel like I did some damage to him for that. And anyway, that's, like, getting me a little choked up. But like, we were both wrapped up in the disease. And we ended up getting clean together shortly thereafter. And we had a chance to, like, work that stuff out. And, you know, thank God for that. So anyway, that same guilt and all that stuff I did, that I, you know, touched on a couple items in my 8-step list. The same stuff that kept me out there got me here. Like, there was a point where I had done so much stuff, and the burden of guilt was so heavy that it was get clean or kill myself. And I've heard that a few times this weekend, and I was really there. It was like just hurt so much to, and it wasn't so much about me. It was like it hurt so much what I did to those other people that like I just wasn't good to this world. I just wasn't worth anything to this world anymore. And you know, it was kind of like that, or try this thing again, because I had done like the outpatient and the rehab tries, but I hadn't like really gotten into recovery yet. Like recovery, like what's happening up here this weekend. But it hurt so bad, and the shame and like the facade that I was trying to keep up finally like fell. Like I had this facade, like I gotta be in school, I gotta have a job, I gotta, like, as long as I got enough pieces standing that I can tell myself that I'm not an addict, I don't really need help. But like that stuff finally fell to the point where I was just like, somebody else throw me a line or give me something else to try, because I tried everything and it didn't work. So I came in here, and my first sponsor, and the only, you know, getting honest, like the only sponsor that I really feel like I really worked on some steps with, and he's not around anymore. Like I finally trusted another man to guide me through these steps, And, you know, most of my eighth step was on my fourth step. But, like, the fourth and fifth step got me to a point where I could look at stuff for what it is, what it was, and how it related to the disease of addiction, and not look at it as, like, a moral deficiency. Like, you know, I was raised good. I kind of had those good morals, and, like, you know, 99% of that shit I did because I was trying to get the next one. And I was running on disease. And not everybody on my amends list would certainly understand that, you know. I wouldn't start an eight-step amend with, sorry I did that to you, but, like, it was the disease of addiction. It wasn't me. So we're cool, right? But I knew that. And so it kind of put that little separation of, you know, I'm doing this because I know what it was, and I'm doing it for me in part, but, you know, I'm also doing it for you, but I got to be comfortable with how it pans out as long as I showed up and did my part. And I can honestly say that I really didn't have any negative experiences with any amends I made. You know, just to give a few life examples, like, and also I want to say, like, these steps are in order for a reason, but, like, just because I didn't formally go through the questions in the step working guide with my sponsor, like, I had been at step meetings, I had read the basic text, like, I knew what the eighth step was. And early in recovery, like, opportunities, not particularly dangerous ones to me, would present themselves, and I would take the opportunity to make an amend. You know, I didn't have to, like, be so regimented that I only made amends in that 4-month period I was working the eighth step with my, or the ninth step with my sponsor. So I remember one early on, one of my best friends, and still my best, one of my best friends today. Kind of at the end of the road, we were at his house one night, and I, like, stole this shit from his house and took it outside and hid it behind his house. And then we went out for the rest of the night and, like, used together. And then I came back later that night and got that stuff and sold it. And his parents had found out what I did, and he got in trouble, and was this big thing, and this other one of our friends had gotten blamed for it, and it kind of damaged their relationship for like a number of years, because this guy was the guy who stole all this shit, not me. And so he got clean, and actually my brother and I, like, really, I mean, like, his parents called us because they knew he had gotten, or was trying to get clean, and had, like, skipped out of a rehab. And my brother and I got called in on, like, the 12-step thing, and it worked. And so I'm probably in my first year of recovery. This guy's probably a few months in. He said, "You remember when that one night when this other guy came in and stole all that shit, and you and I were together?" And it was like, you know, like, heart sank. But I like, choked. I like, got the will up, and I was like, I did that, you know, I did. And he just kind of went away, like, holy fuck, because it was a big thing in our lives at the time. And but, like, he knew how I was living, and we all had, like, a little spiritual principle boiled into us by that time, and like, we talked it through, and I was like, yeah, like, let's make an amend, a financial amend for this. So he went and told his parents. And his parents were pissed at me for, like, a couple minutes. And then they were like, well, this guy's, like, helping our son now. And helping our son's worth more than that shit he stole. And so anyway, I scrounged together some cash. And I, like, dropped a few bucks on these people. And kept helping their son stay clean. And it was, like, a bonding thing for all of us in the end. Like, you know, we all kind of bonded over this amend, and it was like a real in-your-face view of change. You know, like, this guy who lived his whole life a lie and managing lies to not get caught, like cop two something. So it was a real 180 flip. But some of the other amends, like my parents, and like I made amends to my parents real early on because that was just like what needed to happen to restart that relationship, as well as checking back in with them when formally working the eighth step. But I remember one, it was actually a counseling session at a rehab. It wasn't particularly NA driven, but like the first time I used it was out of my dad's top drawer. You know, there was always an ounce of weed in there. There was always a bottle of Lortaz and Oxycontin, and it, like it, to the end, there was like, no, the shit was in like three safes. Even though my brother and I figured out, I remember my brother with a stethoscope on the safe. But so there was like a two-way amend that needed to happen. Like my dad used some drugs, but he never became like me. So like he's an addict. Don't get me wrong, but he never like did the dirty shit that I did. But you know, I had to make an amend for what I did to them and what I put them through, and then I had to also like talk about what he did, and he had to talk about what he did, and it was a moment of, you know, both ways. Like, rather than like just not talking about shit like the generations in my family before did, like, you know, there's addiction in all the generations I can remember in my family, but nobody talked about it. And for once, like, we kind of broke down the barriers and actually talked about it. And it just took a lot of power from it, and like, you know, sort of set the bar with my dad and I. And I remember after getting out of the facility and like figuring out how I was going to interact with my dad afterwards, like I said, like, I don't expect you to change everything, but I said, if you're gonna smoke weed or take pills or any of that shit, like, I can't be around you. I can't be around that. Like, in other words, I don't expect you to change your whole life, but you gotta respect the boundaries of what I'm trying to do. Because at the end, I had started to use with my dad a little bit. And he's respected it thus far, so I haven't had to back off of that. But, you know, there's certain people in your life you can't, like, straight up cut out. You know, certain, like, using friends and active addiction. But your dad's a little bit of a different story. But so anyway, we worked through that, kind of a two-way amends with my dad. And certain like grandparents and stuff, like there's one amends that never fully made that kind of haunts me, but like I found peace with it. Like I remember robbing my grandparents' house one time near the end, and not robbing, but burglarizing my grandparents' house, and like it was this, I knew it like made my grandfather paranoid, like of the world, and just screwed him up like beyond just losing the stuff. Like he became like paranoid of people like threatening his house and his, and like that was some damage, not just to his material things, but like to his mind. Cause my house got burglarized growing up in it. It's the stuff isn't the major damage in that situation. It's the fear that follows. But you know, he passed away kind of early in my recovery, and but he got to see me like get clean and like live right, and that's my amend to him, because I never got to say sorry for stealing your stuff, you know. But the most important piece was just the stopping of doing it and like growing up. So, and I still got some other work to do. I've been here a little while, but like that eighth step and ninth step, it's continuing. And I'm not working a perfect program, and you know, I'm not always on top of my step work, not always working with a sponsor, but I keep showing up enough that the people in my area know who I am. I come here every year. Well, I missed it once, but I was getting married, so I got an excuse. But this retreat's been a big part of my recovery, too. Because, like I said, I'm not like a big... I am a people person. I like people. I just don't like the big crowd and standing up. And anyway, this retreat's like just right for me. It's like in the woods a little bit. This group's only like 20 people. And it's like a throwback to my roots, because after being clean in Altoona for a few years, I ended up going to Harrisburg for grad school originally. But finished grad school there and got a job and stayed for Harrisburg for a few years. And how am I doing on time? All right. Getting close.
It is what it is.
Okay. So I had to do that whole, like, recovery in a place I didn't get clean, which sucks, when you're not, like, desperate to try to build a whole new foundation. But I went to meetings and got plugged in with some people and didn't take anything. And kept coming to this retreat. And, you know, by some miracle on that foundation that I built, stayed clean. And then a little over a couple years ago, my wife and I got a little itch to move. Probably in a healthy way, not an unhealthy way, because I always have an itch of, like, grass is greener, better job, better place to live. But at this time, it had, like, come to a head, and we moved down to Baltimore for a better job and recovery down on the west side area, which is, like, essentially west of the city of Baltimore, immediately west, is a killer recovery group. And lots of good clean time and people, and I feel like this round, I still have a lot of work to do, but this round, like, doing a little better than Harrisburg, and building a little bit of a base in this new area I live in. But it's tough, man. Like, you know, working, you know, I'm kind of making excuses here, but I'm not in rehab. I don't. I got a job. I got, you know, some good friends at work and stuff, and like, it just feels like it's hard to fit everything in sometimes. But if I don't keep some of this in my life, I do believe I'll use again. And I believe I got clean only because of it. So, got to keep it a priority. But that's about all I got. Thanks for letting me share, everybody.